norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin, whatever. So the mental gymnastics comes in because we miss it and we're chasing the dragon. And that's the thing. You got to know if you're bullshitting yourself.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello and welcome back to the Trading Endgame, our ongoing mini-series with sound performance psychology's Sean Sawyer that's leveling up our ability to enunciate alliteration along with our emotional maturity. God damn, I nailed that. So far, we've introduced ourselves to greed, shame, and anger. We'll have links for those in the show notes. We need to catch up. But tonight, we get to meet the life of the party. We're talking about euphoria. It's the one emotion that feels like a happy ending but hides a tragic twist. Did you put the happy ending notes in here for me? Just like, did you specifically choose that phrasing, or was that just a happy coincidence?
That's ChatGPT.
Okay. But before we jump into our discussion on euphoria here, I just want to say a quick thank you to all the guys and gals who are listening live. If you have any questions, please drop them in the chat as we go, and we'll get to as many of them as we can before we wrap up for the night. Sean, you got any news or anything you want to share with the group before we start talking about euphoria? I think I saw another workshop coming up.
Yes, I have a workshop on the 20th coming up. It is set and ready to go. It is 5 weeks. It starts at 4:15, 15 minutes after the bell Eastern, and it runs for 5 weeks, 90-minute sessions, and I'm going to teach you all the stuff to manage your psychological pivots.
Pivots? Is that what you said?
Pivots, psychological pivots.
I don't think I've heard that term before. What do you mean by that? What is a psychological pivot?
Psychological pivot is a choice point, my friend.
Ah, that's right.
Psychological pivot is when the market punches you in the face and you either are going to F up the rest of the day or you're not. Psychological pivot is Trump talks about China tariffs and the market sinks hundreds of points, and you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
What are you doing with yourself the rest of that day? Those are psychological pivots. They dysregulate your nervous system. I teach you how to keep a nervous system online and in the proper state, which is called the parasympathetic state.
None of this should be new if you've been listening to this series too, because I think we've talked a lot about this stuff the past four episodes that we've done.
Yes.
So, Sean, you want to set the stage then for what we're talking about today? Like, what do you want to start with euphoria?
I do want to set the stage today. Sorry, hang on. Give me a second. Yes, I do. And where I really want to set the stage for is euphoria is maybe your biggest problem you don't know about.
Interesting.
Yeah. In terms of especially successful traders, it's the thing that still gets them. It's the thing that, you know, when things are going great and then everything falls apart, people wonder why. In my opinion and the experience I have with traders, breaking down their stories and timelines and getting stuff figured out, it's euphoria.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I was actually doing some reflection on that as I was preparing for this episode. And like, I was kind of identifying, I think, a pattern of myself that comes with Like you get to, I get to a state where I think I figured something out. I get a little bit over cocky, try to lean into that one thing, and then something goes wrong, and then I lose all confidence in everything I was doing, and I'm back to square one. And it feels like that's the cycle that's constantly repeating.
Yeah, exactly. I remember something that just flashed in my head. I was doing a Twitter Spaces one time recently, or not. And Nina was still working with us. So it was 2 years ago almost, but
I mean, that's recent to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. maybe that just speaks to me missing my business partner. Oh yeah. I mean, one of those, you know, fancy pants traders you've all heard of asked me about that thing. Like, why is it that you can be going along, everything's smooth, and all of a sudden the bottom falls out, and it's euphoria. It's, you know, is it in performance and in trading, there's kind of two steps, and you could argue the first step is not euphoria, it's a setup, but whatever, it doesn't matter. It's a part of the process. And the first step is relief. So like you had said in that example, you figure something out, you back test, whatever, it feels good, it's working, you're making profit. There's now a relief, and it's just like, I could breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, there's less stress throughout the day, and you might not be aware of it or not, but there's some relief. A lot of times that relief, and here comes euphoria, is in the form of, I'm now excited. I've gone from stressed to excited, and here's the real kicker that mixes in with euphoria and murders accounts and careers is hope.
Oh, hope. You have a hate relationship with hope, I've noticed.
I do have a hate relationship with hope. All of you out there, I'm going to crush your hope. Why are you hoping? Now, clinically, I have a hate relationship with hope. Yeah, that is true. And I say clinically because in terms of anxiety and depression, it can be very problematic. And in terms of performance, it can be extremely problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we have traders have dubbed it hopium, that phrase, I don't know if it's intentional or not. I don't know who came up with that or where that came from, but it's very fitting because the hopium, you know, it's obviously a reference to, you know, opium and opiates and drugs and addiction and yada yada, and what? Euphoria. You feel really good.
It's that pink dragon.
Exactly. So we have the relief, and the relief feels extremely good. Our nervous system gets a bit of a break, and then the euphoria comes in because we got a result. We have moved from our focus on process, and we've moved it to outcome, and now we're euphoric because we're locked on outcome. Another one of the many reasons euphoria is a problem, that lock you on outcome all the time. You'd be thinking about what you can buy with your money you're making before you make it, etc. Those things lock into place. It is intoxicating. Euphoria, neurologically, neurochemically, it, you know, people talk about dopamine and everything, you know, it's norepinephrine and serotonin and oxytocin for sure. And when those things come in, that intoxication like is great on so many levels, and this is why contextual psychology is so important. So we lose sight of it as traders because dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, oxytocin flooding us in most contexts of our lives is great.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why would you want to stifle it? That's literally the joys of life neurochemically. The problem is trading is not very natural. Like I've talked about, we're not wired well at all for trading. It's
kind of the opposite of what we were.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So unless you or someone you know has bipolar disorder, and you know that the costs and the downsides of mania and hypomania, then you know what I'm about to say. But you know, feeling good, feeling too good, is a problem in certain contexts. And you know, euphoria isn't mania or hypomania. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but it's in the ballpark. And contextually speaking, it's really important because then we're all high and intoxicated and we're trading, and it's not that different than, like, you know, being drunk and trading or being a little high in trade, or, you know, on opiates and trading or something, like, unless you're extremely experienced, I suppose. It's going to mess with your decision making. It's going to mess with your perspective. your fear centers are not going to be as active. And guess what? Unlike a lot of trade psych says, you need fear or else you will completely, your career will be over. Check our episode on that one. But it shuts down your fear. And when you don't have that fear, you're going to risk up, you're going to size up, you're going to switch to some zero DTEs and get gambly or whatever, and you screw yourself.
So is that the main issue with euphoria then? Is it, because it sounds like it overrides your fear responses almost.
Oh yeah, definitely. It is overriding fear. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're euphoric and someone punches you in the face, literally.
Right.
And right. Are like, I'm going to murder you, and they pull out a knife. Like, you're going to be scared. Don't get me wrong.
No, but euphoria might be the thing that gets you to confront that guy and get you punched in the face.
Oh, 1,000%.
Right?
It's the thing that makes people hate you on FinTwit when you're all euphoric and you start bragging and everyone's like, F you or F this guy. He's a fraud or whatever it is. Whether they are or not, who knows? But, you know, that we're all very familiar with euphoria, whether we know it or not. That urge to take the screenshot of your profit instead of take the profit. That's euphoria. And we all, I've talked about that. That's my, when I get that urge, I got to sell.
Right. Or close out the position.
At least get it into a point where it's a house money trade or whatever you want to call it. But anyways, yeah, those things are going along smooth and you're doing great and feeling good and you're talking about trading more and people are noticing what's going on, that you're feeling better and you got a little bit of cash coming in, or at least you're not hemorrhaging cash. And all of a sudden you get sloppy. You're not preparing as much. You're not worrying as much about the things that you should be worrying about. Worrying is a flavor of fear, by the way. Mm-hmm. And when all that stuff leaves you, you're just incredibly vulnerable. It's like a knight deciding to take off their armor and head out because no one could beat them. They're awesome. I kick everyone's ass, win, motherfuckers. And then they take off that armor and head out, and then they get slaughtered.
Still acting like they have their armor on.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the things that I was just thinking of is like driving, I think, is an instance where I think I get lulled into that false sense of security too often. Then you have a near miss, mm-hmm. and then suddenly like, oh, you're the best driver in the world again for at least the next like day or two until that fades off in the distance, you know?
Interesting. Driving.
Yeah, you'd think about the times you're like the safest driver you've ever been. It's usually after like a near miss, right? Like that's the time
Have you had major car accidents?
No,
in your life?
I have not, actually. I've only, I've had a couple brushes, but nothing major.
That is an interesting observation. Because I think it's a great observation because it's a very subtle. And that's the trick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's tricky about euphoria and trading is it's that whole, frog in the frying pan or whatever.
Right, like yeah.
It comes in, like you're feeling good and you're looser and get some endorphins going.
Been running good for a week, 2 weeks. Like it just gets, yep.
Your opioid system and your cannabinoid system is sending you some doses of pleasure. And, then whack. You're not paying attention and you get sideswiped because you didn't see the stop sign.
So is euphoria then more of like an acute or is it more of a chronic? I don't know what I say, like symptom or cause or what. I don't know what the word, term for that is, but.
It's a good question. This is definitely an opinion answer. Like, I don't think there's a right, a yes, no, wrong, correct answer about this.
Right.
It's not chronic.
Mm-hmm.
If it was chronic, it would be hypomania or like a Pollyanna personality issue, which is anomalous and not a big deal. Don't read too much into this.
Okay.
But Pollyanna is a clinical thing. And I guess I'm speaking to the audience. Like, those people that are always just like, turn your frown upside down. Like those annoyingly positive.
Punch them in the face. Yeah.
Right. I would like to strike them as well. They are Pollyanna.
Yeah.
That's Pollyanna. And Pollyanna is like, maybe it's wonderful and me and you are bitter bastards and we should get out, whatever.
Maybe
like that's the way to be. Who knows? I'm just being honest. But the Pollyanna thing, it can be a problem, actually, because if you choose, like, it can be a defense mechanism. you know, because all of a sudden, and like, you're starting to ignore problematic things because like, everything's okay. Look, you know, it's sunny out today, but you know, meanwhile, you have an infection on your leg. You're ignoring that is, you know, you're going to have to get your foot chopped. You're going to, you know, something chopped off your body, or you get some tumor growing, some growth on your side, but you're like, la, 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 you know, everything's great. that's Pollyanna.
Okay. So I think
that's definitely a thing. You know someone who's got it.
I have some of those tendencies. I am of the opinion of I don't worry about something until it's time to worry about it. And I think like me and my wife kind of butt heads sometimes over that philosophy.
Oh, I bet. Women are so much better prepared than we are.
Yeah, she wants to prepare. She wants to plan. And then I'm more of the, well, it's not a problem yet. When it becomes a problem, then we'll deal with it.
Maybe one of the reasons why women are better traders, you know, people talk about that they use that phrase all the time. And a lot of times it's about like, emotional intelligence. I think I've even said that, and it is to some extent, but it's really, you know, if you're going back to hardwiring stuff, hunting and gathering era, which was, you know, a couple hundred thousand years, they were planning and organizing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were the gatherers, but they had the kids on the back. They were, you know, they were that ability to plan, execute day over day for survival.
Oh.
I think benefits female traders.
Yeah, especially with the gatherer mentality, you're looking for consistent gains to keep you alive, whereas the hunters out there are trying to get that big win.
Safety, pragmatism. Yeah, and hunters are looking for the big win. That's a great way to put it. And hunters, you know, they can get themselves in trouble, right?
Yeah.
You know, and they can, and also the nature of hunting is you're not always going to get something. And, well, that matches the nature of trading. The mindset of a lot of traders is, you know, you always see there's guys sniper this or, you know,
right.
Make all these war analogies. I know I'm speaking to a veteran, so I'm not, you know, it's just ridiculous, right? Like how can, like it's trading, dude. It's an auction. It's a farmer's market on a massive level. Like it's commerce. Chill out. It is not war, and your mindset of bringing war to it is what's probably killing you. If you're profitable, you can tell me to shut that up. That's cool. And you have that mindset, but there's not many of you.
Right. I think just from the discussions that we've had, I think it's pretty obvious that there's many different flavors of trader out there.
Yes.
And one size fits all approach is not going to work for anybody in this industry.
No, that's the problem is there's so much of that, and the one size fits all, there are things that do fit everybody.
Mm-hmm. Journaling,
they're in my workshop.
Right.
No, I'm
yes, no, for real.
I'm serious. Like
this introspective work.
So, you take popular trader guy, you take experienced trader guy, you take successful trader guy who's popular and disseminates their thoughts on trading psychology. It's valid for them,
mm-hmm.
not valid for anybody else, because they don't have the knowledge, where know-how, experience to generalize accurately. You know, I have my trading experience, and I certainly project that onto clients or this podcast, whatever. But also, I have 30,000 hours of clinical experience. I've had intimate relationships, not the traditional intimate relationship you would think of, but I've had intimate relationships with thousands of people
mm-hmm.
in my life. That's not normal.
Right.
That's, you know, that's a unique thing about my job. It's it's a great thing about my job, but, that you understand what can be universally applied and what can.
Interesting.
And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because there's just certain things that do apply to everyone. And then it's, we're all, you know, unique snowflakes, but really we've had different childhoods. I mean, you're going to have a different psychological makeup than your sibling
mm-hmm.
who grew up in the same house. Well, twins might be the exception to that, but
no, my mom's a twin and identical, and they are night and day different.
Yeah. So there's only so much you can generally apply. And for those out there looking for information on their own, you know, you want to read about how to manage your nervous system. You want to read stuff that's good for general well-being. Like that's what's going to be out there. It's pretty universal.
What about just learning like the actual mechanisms behind like some of these feelings and emotions, like the sort of like biological nature of it? Like, 'cause we mentioned in previous episodes that being somewhat helpful.
So, there's a popular cute little quote in my business called, you gotta name it, tame it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
Yeah.
It's important to label. It's important to understand. And that, I give that is one of those universally applicable things. And I teach that. And, you know, that's why the emotion wheel is out there. I think I've got that out there publicly, and the feel scale and all that. Like,
mm-hmm.
just doing that is going to advance you. Going to build that intelligence. But, you know, just knowing it, no, it won't change. Because in the sense of, like, I can explain why, you know, someone wants to control everything around them, or someone wants to, you know, be perfect, or someone wants to cut themselves. I can give everyone an exact, you know, give me the time to do an assessment and know you a little bit. Like, I can tell you exactly why you do it. It doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
So there's only so far that as to well as that works. And you see where it crosses over into the universality, into the individual. So we got to keep it focused on for trading. It's, we all know those things that can happen. There's those events intraday. There's the successes, there's the failures, and how we handle them. In this case, we're talking about handling successes and, you know, not having it come back to haunt us, or not, you know, giving back our gains or whatever. There's the biological part, the physiological part that we're all going to experience. And then there's the common trader stuff, scaling up, moving your stop losses.
That's, yeah, yeah.
You know, thinking you have inside information because, you know, someone cut some idea about the news, or you were early on the news or whatever.
Sometimes you just see a tweet and you suddenly, like, that's the one that you think, yes, is going to be the thing.
And this is why mindfulness, everything is so important, because you got to realize that you see that tweet and you're like, oh, that's a relief. And that relief releases the stuff that can lead to euphoria. But definitely, like, that relief, we feel too good about the relief, and then we shoot for it because maybe we've been really frustrated in the last little while training or whatever. And if we're not managing our nervous system, we're more susceptible to that kind of thing.
Oh, I think I just had an aha moment. So to me, it sounds like the thing that would be most beneficial to focus on is noticing when you feel that relief.
Yeah, like, that's a huge,
paying a lot of attention to what's causing that, what feelings you're feeling, what urges that's giving you. Like, I think if you can really dive down and understand that, then they probably put you in a pretty good situation.
That's why the feel scale has the positive end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as much of a problem, if not more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you feel too good, whatever, it's different than contentedness.
Mm-hmm.
Contentedness is fine.
Right.
Euphoria is not that.
Interesting. So here's an interesting thing. We pivot a little bit, but...
Sure.
Ready to nerd out on the tech shaping tomorrow? Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025, is back for season 2. We're featuring pioneers rocking Web3, AI, and blockchain innovation. So get the scoop on the people powering the next wave of innovation by subscribing now wherever you get your podcasts. And join us for the fun in September at bostonblockchainweek.com for the killer talks, epic vibes, and top-tier networking. And if you happen to run into me or my wife, come see us, because we probably have unused drink tickets. Eric, why should people listen to season 2?
I'm really excited for season 2 because what's interesting is that we talked about the founding of America. You know, we set that foundation. And now we're going to watch America try and build a house that will become divided and burned down.
And, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly.
Yeah, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly. It's going to end with the nation ripping itself apart, the founding of the best Virginia, and, you know, the suspending of habeas corpus. about as broad as you get it. But what's going to be cool is what emerges from season 2 is the foundation for the world's largest, most advanced economy.
You visit the website, buckstartsherepodcast.com, to stay up to date. We'll see you all next week. Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. The email again, SPULLEN@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
We talk about like some of the I guess the pitfalls of euphoria, but what about like the idea of being rewarded for doing the wrong thing? Like that's something I'm always on guard for. I find myself, I've gotten very good, I think, of noticing like, okay, was I lucky or was this a good trade? And I do a good job, I think, now of telling myself when I did something impulsive or and got lucky and acknowledging it.
Yeah. So that's one of the individual factors that's going to influence how euphoria affects you.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of what brings us into that trap, and I'll say that that applies to me too at times, but the place you're coming from in the first place is what matters most for that question. Like whether it's been, things have been tough lately and you're not feeling good about your trading or yourself, or, you know, things are rocky in your relationship or with your kid or whatever, there's that. And then there's the individual who just has lower self-esteem or self-image, who has been, you know, has like been criticized more in their life or whatever, has just, you know, carries some weight of things like that from life. That's going to amplify it even more.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you come from that baseline, it's a higher high, you know, because you're starting at lower.
Right.
And so even if it's, so if it's chronic and personality based, or if it's just situational and it's like, oh, my, you know, I've been disappointing my partner lately, I've been, my kids, you know, are mad at me, whatever, that's situational, or I'm moving and I'm stressed, whatever. That's still going to be something to drop from and be something to be aware of, or to rise up from. But if you're coming from a lower place in general, like it's built into your belief, your personality, it's yes, that's an excellent point.
So it almost sounds, I mean, again, like to harp on the same point, but like bigger changes are more noticeable than when the bathwater is turned up on you slowly, right? So noticing those stress reliefs or noticing those spikes, like those are probably, you're going to have better success in catching it in that moment.
It's going to be easier to catch those.
Yeah.
And then it's a learning curve. It's like I can catch those, then I got to catch the smaller ones. I got to get down to nuance.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that people, I don't know if I assume people got this, but it might just be like being in the business so long, but you know, performance enhancement psychology and performance enhancement interventions, they're usually intervening on smaller issues, like stuff that's not all that big a deal. Like, because once you get the big stuff out of the way,
right,
and believe me, the big stuff is messing with your trading.
But
once you get the big stuff out of your way, and frankly, a lot of traders, if you're trading decently, you probably don't, you might not have a ton of big stuff. It's like, it's more likely you're struggling, but once you get that stuff out of the way, then you're getting little stuff out of the way, because it moves from the thing you just said, you know, noticing the big drops, the big changes, and then you got to notice the smaller ones, because the nuance, the subtlety is really important with trading, right? You know, all that data, and we miss that data. And unless you're mindful enough, or you're in the zone enough, or in the flow enough, whatever the hell you want to call it, or how you, whatever it works best for you, when you're outside of that, you're really not going to notice it. And if you're not good at being in those states, and because those states are something we create, we can turn on and off. We can, you know, we can make it more likely or less likely that we're going to be in those states. That's why we need that ability to eventually catch that nuance, because catching the big stuff, yes, it's important, massively important, and has to happen. But it has to happen so you can continue your growth.
Right. Like you have to learn how to catch stuff, right? And if you can't recognize the forest, you're not going to be able to go out and spot individual trees in there. Like you got to start somewhere.
Hell no. I love that quote. That's great.
Oh, thank you.
How did you put that dome? If you don't know the... Boom.
I forgot, but it's on recorded.
Yeah.
All right.
Getting old, serious stuff.
So I think we talked a bit about like why you want to understand and be cognizant of euphoria, but maybe we talk about some ways to recognize it. We talked a little bit about the stress, the relief as being one way. Are there any other ways?
Yes. So as I was conveniently helping our segue here, spot the change. Like notice the spike, notice the drop. Usually it's a spike because it's a relief in this context we're talking about. But that's massively important. And you get to the level where you can see the more subtle ones with everything I was just talking about. Getting really tied in with your values. I know I talk about that a lot, and there's a reason I talk about it a lot. And your values are your why. They're why you trade, or why you want to change your life, or have it, or create this opportunity, or whatever. If you lose sight of those intraday, you're going to make stupid mistakes. Mm-hmm. If you don't lose sight of them intraday, you're going to be more anchored to them, and they're going to inform your decisions, because they're going to, if like things like the people you love and care about are going to be in those values, or the things you care about or the life you want to have are going to be contained in those values. And when you have those and you're tethered to that, you're less likely to take the lottery trade, because you don't want to threaten all that. You don't want to disappoint those faces that you love. Right.
Now there's actually a consequence.
Picture those faces. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like it. All right. Well, okay. So this is something that we didn't do yet in this episode. We've done in the previous ones, but I'd like to list out some of the things that caused me to feel euphoria. So I did the exercise this time, and I don't know if we can walk through them and
sure,
maybe give me your thoughts on this. So like the most obvious one is winning something. Like winning like just feels good, obviously. If I'm right about something, especially if that also means that you're winning, like if there's money on the line, like tied to being right, that's a big boost for me. Getting genuine recognition. This is an interesting one, but like somebody like coming to me and like genuinely appreciating something I did, like feels really, really good. Accomplishing something very, very difficult, is something else to put in there. And then I was also noticing as I was going through this that they all kind of feel like forms of validation.
Yep.
I was curious if there was something in there that maybe I should be paying attention to.
Yeah. Yeah. What creates a need for the validation is what you want to be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, I appreciate that. I mean, winning something, you know, that's the obvious one, right?
Right.
Maybe, but that's, you win trades, I suppose, is one way to, is a way to look at it. So
being right is huge when you have the scorecard every time that tells you, you know, you were right, you were wrong, and then here's the result for that.
And if you're being, so psychologically, if you have not been told you're right very much, or you're not used to being told you're right or believing you're right, that sets you up. But it doesn't even, that is even irrelevant. Like it's not, excuse me, it's not irrelevant, but you don't need to have that background for this to be an issue.
Right.
Because the being right feels good in the, again, contextual thinking in the context of trading. What does being right mean? It means you're making money.
Mm-hmm.
It means you were making money for clicking this mouse.
Right.
You know, like it is very euphoric. It's like, how, what? You know, we've all busted our ass for money in our lives. And all of a sudden it's like, I just clicked a bunch of things and there's like a month's salary sitting in there. What?
But what about, you know, what about this though? Like when you start to like do mental gymnastics to make yourself right. Like, oh, that move didn't do what I thought it was going to do. It actually went a little bit lower, but I was still kind of right because I was in the right area, so I can celebrate that win, you know?
Well, think back to, it's a great question, but and you connect the dots to earlier. When you're feeling euphoric, your cannabinoid system is making that. Your opioid system is making that. Norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin, whatever. So the mental gymnastics comes in because we miss it and we're chasing the dragon.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing. You got to know if you're bullshitting yourself. You know, I talk to people about their thoughts, bullshitting them a lot. And sometimes it's kind of abstract, but our thoughts lie.
All the time.
You know, our mind lies to us constantly. We have to really mind our relationship with our mind. And that's just one of those examples of it BSing us and it being costly. But, you know, it's, if you think about it, like, why wouldn't you want to feel good in most contexts? Why wouldn't you want to build your self-esteem or your confidence or your competence? Like everyone, I think a lot of people use mental gymnastics now because everyone's been told they're a special boy and girl.
I know, right? Everyone gets a trophy.
At least the certain generations have. And so they really jones it when they don't get it. They really miss it when they don't get it. I mean, just as a therapist for 22 years, you can, you know, the difference in working with the generations has been, is fascinating.
You should write a book on that, because I would love to.
I'm sure someone probably has. Yeah. It's wild. And I, you know, give me, wait till I hit the 30-year mark and then I'll write it. I'm at 22 right now. So, but it has been wild, because I only have so much Gen Z, whatever they're called.
Right.
Data right now. But yeah.
All right. Well, I got a couple other questions here we can get to before we wrap up, if you like.
Sure.
So this is one that, this one's actually mine here, but Mike, why does it feel so good to do something when I'm supposed to be doing something else? Like, if I want to knock off for the day and go play games with my wife instead of doing, like, you know, the actual work that I'm supposed to be doing at the time, it feels way better to do it then than it does to do it during the time when I set aside to do it.
So what, give me a little more, like, so say you do that.
Yeah.
What does it feel like?
In the moment, it's just, it's almost like you're doing something you're not supposed to, but like, there's a little bit of that, like being like a rebel kind of, like, I'm not conforming.
It's a thrill. Nonconformity is a thrill. Being the outlier is a thrill. Being the guy who's right is a thrill. Go back to training.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, why does it feel so good? The act of rebelling generally feels pretty good. That's why a lot of people are.
This shows up in my trading a lot when the rules that I implement to try to keep myself safe, like, I find myself constantly wanting to break them, and it feels good when I do.
Right. So let me finish that thought. So what you just said makes, because in general, it's going to feel good to rebel because it's empowering. It's powerful. People like feeling powerful.
Powerful. People interesting.
Like, it's exercising your volition. People like exercising their volition. Trading, you exercise a lot of volition. That's part of why we're hooked on it, in my opinion. And, you know, when you're rebellious, it feels very good. Rebelliousness, again, this is one of those things where it's a multi, it can be really different. Some people can be addicted to rebellion because they've been controlled
mm-hmm.
and abused or abused. Some people can be addicted to rebellion because it helps them avoid.
Mm.
And when you go and say F it and do whatever for the day, whatever you're stressed about, you're like putting it aside for the day. And in my opinion, when you go and do stuff like that, you're also more likely to be in the moment and mindful and enjoying it, because it's new, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the job of a practitioner of mindfulness, which is what every successful trader is going to need to be, in my opinion, is that things constantly look new. Things stay fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get lulled by charts. You don't get lulled. You walk down the street, you've walked down 100 times, but you notice the thousands different thing you've noticed because you have a beginner's mind, they call it in Buddhism, or, you know, just practicing mindfulness, where you're observing and describing, you're noticing what's going on around you. You're paying attention to details intentionally
mm-hmm.
for a purpose. In this case, it's a purpose tied into your values. It's a purpose tied into why you trade. And it keeps that stuff more fresh, so you don't have to rebel quite as much. But so there's the chronic rebellion, then there's like criminal and all that, and that's a different kind of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say
that. Taking power back is definitely a thing with rebelling. But I mean, there's even an intervention in my business called passive rebellion, where you like help the person figure out ways they can like rebel. It's kind of a bit of a Jedi mind trick thing, but it's a little bit of a semantic trick. But it's important, because if people's rebellion is hurting them in whatever kind of way, it's tough to just stop doing that, but you can do it in different contexts that aren't so harmful.
I would be much happier if I wouldn't rebel in the market. If I could rebel somewhere else, I'd be
exactly,
you know? Yeah,
it's the context you rebel in. You cannot rebel again. I mean, yeah, the market is
not the
you
place.
Say
for
no,
that.
it's like hold my beer. Obviously, it doesn't even say hold my beer, because it needs beer held.
Nope. So the other note I made in there as you're talking was identity, because I think that's something that's come up before. Is I was wondering, maybe the underdeveloped sense of identity maybe ties into that a little bit too. Because
yes, it does.
When I rebel, that's now I'm defining what I am. Right.
Yes, 1,000% correct. That is a huge motivation for rebellion and a huge motivation, that's where it does start to get into more, much more problematic stuff. But it's a way of differentiating who you are from someone else. Yeah. You have a low sense of self. Obviously, I've talked about in the context of like, you might argue with people for the sake of arguing, even if you don't really buy it. Same deal.
Yep.
If you rebel, they're them. They're the sheep. They're the flock. I'm the rebel.
Right.
I mean, think about how much traders like to talk about like sheep and, you know, these suckers working for 9 to 5. And meanwhile, you know,
everyone's buying whatever's the dip, but I piled in short. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a pretty good answer for me. Carlos, I got one from him. Then we could probably wrap up here. He had messaged, and this was, I'll put the Discord message here, but his question was to deal with processing large swings. It says, after the euphoria is wore off, like, how do I get back to just the regular old me, get back to work as usual? How do I process this large win or change in the account state?
So Carlos has been a member for a while. So I have a I have an answer for him.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And I have an answer in more general answer for him. Carlos, thank you for the question. For you, you're going to need to take an extra day. You know, in the Discord, and when I was doing the group coaching and all that, we kind of talked about this analogy of, Carlos tends to run down the hall. He's kind of in a hurry. He thinks fast. He's really bright. He's moving. And, you know, a lot of times I'm like, are you running down the hall? Or I'll, you know, he'll put something in chat and they'd be like, you gotta walk down the hall. And so for someone who's coming down off of a big high, you need time. You need a break. I know there's a lot of people who are like, if you are trading well, you floor it. And that I do not disagree with.
But is it confidence or is it?
As long as you're not euphoric.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You have to know, are your results, like you mentioned a while back, is it luck or skill? Am I feeling confident or am I feeling euphoric? And those are different feelings. You know, euphoria is much more of a high. Confident is quieter. Euphoria is yelling. Confidence is you sleep like a baby. Euphoria is you can barely sleep because you want to get up and trade. And that'd be the more broad answer.
Yeah.
But time is always a safe one. If you're a fast thinker, if you're a very excited person, if you're, you know, raring to go all the time, you probably need a little more of a break.
Does your mind work faster than the rest of your body?
Yeah. And if your mind is telling you that there's a problem, like, oh, this euphoria is wearing off. I know I've done this in the past. That's actually your values kicking in because it's a values conflict. You know, because historically when you get euphoric, you've given it back. That says F you to what your values. That says F you to the reasons you trade. So the more you start this awareness, you start to build, and Carlos has that. Carlos does the work. Like that man has turned the workshop into a career for himself. I mean, he does the stuff religiously. He's using that Skinner alert in the Discord and all that. He's using that all the time. And it's paying off. Mm-hmm. So he knows when those shifts are. He can feel when he's up higher. He can feel when he's coming down. He pays a lot of attention. And that's where that's like the answer for everyone is like, do the effing work. And if you're more susceptible, you have to know that and accept that you need to walk away from the market a little bit because it is euphoria and not like growing confidence or competence. And, the break is never going to kill you. Like the market's always got the opportunities. Don't get me wrong. Big bull runs, you know, whatever. Like I get people want to drop the hammer and keep going, but you can keep yourself from being euphoric during a great bull run.
Yeah. I just want to say too, like, it's almost, so the fact that Carlos is asking those questions and hearing those questions actually sounds like, the place that you want to be. Like if you're hearing the questions, then you like, boom, you're there. Now, you know what, like you're hearing the voices, you're hearing the thing telling you like, maybe we should slow down a little bit. Like now it's just time to listen to it. Right.
Yep. That's right. And that's where you start developing a relationship of trust with yourself and trusting your instincts and trusting intuition. And there's a pretty famous saying that, you know, intuition whispers and you can listen for the whispers. You know, that's an important thing is subtlety, detail when you're building self-awareness and emotional intelligence and things like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts? Anything final thoughts to leave us with before we wrap up?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I think today that we learned that euphoria isn't quite the happy ending that we all thought it was. The potential for tragedy there is very high unless you can turn that into some training. So don't fight it. Spar with it. Journal it daily. Remember to visit soundperformancepsychology.com. You can book a free consultation. Sign up for that upcoming workshop. Everybody else, please like, share, subscribe to all the things. We'll be back soon with a new episode. Start that cycle all over again.
Thank you.
Ever wondered if that UFO sighting was a secret government project?
Not because they didn't go to the moon, but because they seen something on the moon they weren't supposed to.
Or if ancient civilizations really had alien architects.
Like, so Roswell, obviously they think they recovered crafts and beings.
On Theorist Theorizing, wild speculation meets seasoned storytelling.
How they dug 2 kilometers below these pyramids and created all the structures that we're now finding.
Join the theorists as they dive into UFOs, cryptids, government cover-ups, true crime, and the weirdest theories the internet and humanity has to offer.
Giza and the pyramids itself being an energy source, you know?
It's not a lecture. It's a round table of curiosity, comedy, and what if.
Maybe they got tipped off by these U-boats that fled to Argentina, that there was something there.
Theorist Theorizing. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.